Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. I'm Scott Horton. I've been having fun watching Barton Gellman from the Washington Post, who is certainly, you know, as good as it gets when it comes to the Washington Post and is, you know, the Greenwald of the Post over there doing the NSA beat. He's the author of Angler, which is a pretty damn hardcore book about Dick Cheney for a guy who writes for the Post, at least from what I know of it. You know, reviews and excerpts and stuff. I never read the whole thing or anything. But anyway, so it's Gellman sticking up for Snowden and sticking up for journalism and sticking up for the First Amendment and sticking up for his reporting and the other reporters' work on the Snowden documents. And then, I gotta tell you, man, you know, Michael Hayden, I respected him as a torturer. You know what I mean? He seemed to exude a little bit of competence as America's lead torturer. You know, that kind of thing. It's true that 9/11 happened on his watch over there at the National Security Agency. You know what he tried to tell Jim Bamford? This was his excuse, which we know it doesn't hold up to the story that Bamford tells in the Shadow Factory at all. But this was his excuse. He said, if Bin Laden walks across a bridge from Canada to America, I can't touch him. Now he's a U.S. person. That is such a damn lie. You can touch him all you want. You just have to go to the FISA court. If he's tied to a foreign government or a foreign terrorist group, then your threshold of evidence that required for the authority to tap is want to. The FISA court never says no. Certainly not if it's real ass Al-Qaeda in the country. Oh, woe is me. I had no authority to know anything about the Al-Qaeda hijackers in America. Damn liar. And anyway, nobody ever calls him out on that. Hey, weren't you supposed to be protecting America the day 9/11 happened and the year and a half before that? That these guys were in the country and calling home and going back home and coming back again? Oh, you never knew a thing about it, huh? Never had a thing that you woulda, coulda, shoulda told the FBI or the CIA that you wish you had now, huh? Is that right? Hell, Michael Scheuer, from the CIA's Bin Laden unit, told me on this show, or one of these shows that I do, that the NSA would not hand over the intercepts from the Yemeni safe house, where I think it was Hani Hanjour's father-in-law was the head Al-Qaeda operator of the switchboard over there. People would call from America and from all over the world to the house in Yemen, and for years on end, too. Nice operational security guys, these idiots, these murderers. And so, and then they would relay all the information back and forth from Afghanistan. You know, call it one hop, NSA tap. And the CIA couldn't get the NSA to give them the information at all. And here the CIA's plotting to try to murder Bin Laden, to kill him, justifiable homicide, in Afghanistan before 9/11 we're talking about here. And the NSA wouldn't give it to him and wouldn't give it to him. And Scheuer told the story on this show, and I think he's written this before, but he certainly told this story on the show. The way he put it was that George Tenet, the head of the CIA, lacked the moral courage. Even though he was the DCI, which at that time, he wasn't just the head of the CIA. That meant he was the director of Central Intelligence, which made him the boss of the NSA. A civilian boss over NSA, over DIA, over the National Reconnaissance Office, and all the rest of them. Answerable to him, including CIA. Head of CIA and the rest. And they changed that with the position of National Intelligence Director, but that's how it was then. So George Tenet had 1,000% authority to tell the NSA, give those damned intercepts to the Alex station, to the Bin Laden hunters at the CIA. But he wouldn't do it. And Michael Scheuer's here pulling his hair out going, God damn it, I work for George Tenet. How do you like that for a crappy lot in life? And you know what they did? The CIA, Tenet let them do this. They had to build their own listening station at Madagascar, that giant island off of the southern, southeastern coast of Africa. and they had to build a separate listening post there in order to point the antenna at Yemen and try to tap that phone call. And they could. They did. But they could only hear one half of the conversation. And they still couldn't get the NSA to give them the other half of the conversations. That would be the Afghanistan half of the phone calls. Madness. I mean, you would think that the CIA would have launched a covert op against the NSA to blow it up from the inside after some crap like that. Although, I guess, since no one was held accountable for September 11th, then, you know, why does CIA have to hold a grudge against NSA? They all got away with it scot-free. You know? Not doing their job, at best. At all. And anyway, at all, at best, I guess, is what I meant to say. Anyway, so, this scumbag Michael Hayden, this demonstrably most worthless person in America. Here he is debating Barton Gellman, and Barton Gellman is, he's brilliant, man. I really like him. I'm really impressed. I always did like Barton Gellman, man, for a Washington Post reporter. You know, he's, well, and look at the work he's done on the Snowden stuff. I guess I would throw in a little criticism that he doesn't seem to do as much of the whistleblowing stuff that's like outright violations of our rights. He's doing newsworthy stuff. I don't hold it against him. But he's doing more stories about what the NSA is doing to the Chinese more often, stuff like that, which gives the ammo to the Michael Haydens of the world to use against Greenwald, who's not so much covering that beat, not as much anyway. Greenwald tends to be a lot more focused on what the NSA is doing to us. But anyway, and there's a hell of a lot of reporters involved in reporting all this stuff. So anyway, but I still think Gellman, he's a straight shooter. He's doing a good job here. And then here is my point that I never did get to, but now I'm about to. And that is that Michael Hayden, who 9/11 happened on his watch, reminds me of Donald Rumsfeld more than anything else. This is what I was going to start to say when I was saying he exudes competence as a torturer. I mean, not that he's any good at stopping massive terrorist attacks against America. But watching him debate Gellman here, he seems like a real dolt. He seems like Donald Rumsfeld. Just obfuscating. Just taking his off ramps before he has to answer the real question. I mean, Gellman says, this is one example. Gellman says, listen, you know, this oversight is more mythical than actual. And I'll tell you what I mean, for example. And then he goes on to explain about how, well, you know, what happens is that the senators have the clearance, but their staff doesn't. And the senators, they don't do all the work. They need their staff to do all the work. But since their staff doesn't have the clearance, they, most of the time, they can't get their staff the ability to go and look at the real secrets and brief them about what's really going on. And he didn't go on to mention that, of course, the senators and the congressmen prefer it that way. They would rather not know, so it doesn't have to be their fault, all the horrible stuff that's going on a covert and clandestine basis. But anyway, so then Hayden goes, whoa, no, let me talk now, because I don't know, man, this is all these accusations. And then he proceeds to go blah, blah, blah about triangles and all metaphysical and non-tangible arguments about checks and balances and whatever. Oh, we got to keep it a right triangle and not isosceles. And he keeps trying to say stuff in just that pitch in order to make the audience laugh. The audience are students at American University. Average age, early 20s. Ha ha ha, we gotta make sure that the triangle stays a right triangle and not isosceles. You know what I mean, kids? You guys take math classes, am I right? Ha 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 ha. And of course, these idiot kids going to school in DC, they love it. They're like, yeah, ha ha, that is funny. Triangles are funny. I know about triangles too, right, yeah. Like Homer Simpson. I get jokes. But meanwhile, he hadn't said anything. I mean, I got it on mute now. I'm just watching. I can't really read the closed captioning out of the corner of my eye while I'm ranting. But I've been watching this for about an hour. And, you know, the closest thing that he made to a case for anything, he didn't even make a case. Here's what he said. He said, listen, you got to have some secrecy, which I don't think anybody was arguing Not there. I mean, here you would get an argument, but not there was anyone arguing that the government's due no secrecy whatsoever, the right to protect their agents in the field or, you know, whatever it is. Oh, crap. I forgot what I was going to say, what his example was. Yeah, I suck at this. Don't worry about me. I'm as bad at this as Michael Hayden is, apparently, who 9/11 happened on his watch. Damn it, Horton, what was that thing in your brain? Well, I don't know, guys. Lucky for me, in 30 seconds, the bumper music's going to start playing and bail my ass out. I may or may not think of what the hell I was going to say during the break there. Let's see. Hayden and making no sense and phony arguments. Oh, the closest thing he came to a real argument was... can't remember. Anyway, you know what you should do? You should turn off this show and go watch Michael Hayden on C-SPAN yourself right now. And then, you know, think for yourself. The hell would you listen to me for anyway? Jim Bovard's going to be on the show later. You might want to listen to what he says. God, I suck at this. What was it? The closest thing Hayden had to an argument. I can't think of what it was. Was there one? I think there was one, but what was it? Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org. You know what? I don't care if I can't remember what was the closest thing that Hayden had to a good argument. He didn't have any good arguments at all. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. The government is breaking the law. And they're lying in every way about what it is that they're doing. Triangles and metaphysics and hocus pocus and pablum. Can't even, what do you got to do to get Michael Hayden to even complete a sentence? Well, it's a scary world, and sometimes things have to be done, and things are things, and sometimes things are triangles, and yeah, whatever, Donald Rumsfeld. What's he even talking about? Meanwhile, the guy that wrote the Patriot Act said that the NSA knowingly, deliberately twisted and has violated his law. When they said you can go after business records, they didn't say, oh, here's your loophole, here's your commerce clause, go ahead and do anything you want to anyone you want from now on. It didn't say that. It said you can collect what's relevant. And it didn't say go ahead and change the word relevant to mean anything, whether it's relevant or not. And go ahead and change the word collect to mean not collect, but collect and then... also later look at. Gelman says, man, they're straight dishonest. They said forever that, we cannot tell anyone how many times we go to the FISA court for 215 authorization. It's a secret and it'll jeopardize everything. And then the Congress said that, no, you have to tell us at least, you have to say, I don't know, for whatever reason, somebody got this done in Congress. You have to say how many times you go to the FISA court. And he said, okay, look, it's no big deal. It's just 24 times in the last year or so. And they go to the FISA court under the 215, collect relevant information at a less than Fourth Amendment-y threshold. 24 times. Oh, okay. And then as Gelman explains, that 24 times covered trillions of American phone records. Those were 24 general warrants. To collect whatever you want. 24 times. the fact that these people are at war with the English language makes it pretty obvious, I think, to anyone, whether you have any politics or not. The fact that they are lying to you about what the words they use mean means that they know that they are guilty criminals. And Gelman said, hey, look, the proof's in the pudding. The first question for Gelman is, why do you get to decide what to declassify and everything? And he says, because competition between the Fourth Estate and the U.S. state, that's part of the game. That's how it works. And we take our risks and we'll see what happens. But check out what happened here. We published these documents and the American people gasped. Are you kidding me? They had no idea what was going on, the degree to which their records were being collected by the government, the degree to which their Google searches, their cell phone location data, their email, their everything is being X-key-scored right up by the NSA in violation of what they assumed, at least, were the protections afforded them. The fact that the people freaked out at all is proof that they had the right to know right there, that this was not just some leak by some leaker. This was a whistle blown. The fact that the first federal court judge to say, yes, you have standing, and so, yes, let's look at this stuff, compared it to a George Orwell dystopian nightmare, and said, hey, I'm just a lowly, plain old, regular federal judge, and it's going to be left up to higher judges than me to decide, but I can tell you, which was kind of a cowardly thing for him to do and stay his own injunction and everything, but anyway, he said, this is very likely unconstitutional and illegal. And it's clearly un-American because it goes against some of the very basic precepts of what Americans think it means to be an American. Like, hey, they can't come in your house unless a judge is willing to ratify that, yeah, they've sworn a case that they have a probable cause, not just a suspicion or a reason to think, or maybe they don't like you, or maybe a local politician hates you, but no, probable cause to believe that evidence of a crime will be found, or the criminal they're looking to arrest will be found. And only when the judge signs off can they come and do it. Now, that's far from perfect. I'm not saying that's the utopian ideal, but that's the law, isn't it? In America? They can't just come in your house and look through all your bank records, all your paperwork, all your financial history. Can they? I read a great thing where the guy said, you know what? All of my banking information, all of my mortgage stuff, all of my emails, all of my web, everything, everything's on my phone. All of it. Now, I'm not quite that far into the 21st century. I need more computers to run this rig, for example. And I got chores. I need regular computers to do. But anyway, I mean, you can see how right there. In fact, that was in the context of, the pat-down search from when you're arrested. Oh, well, you know, you were already under arrest for driving on a suspended license, and now we happen to have found a joint in your pocket when we did the mandatory search to make sure you didn't have any weapons on you and everything. Got to catalog all your property after all so you can get it back when we released you. And so, oh, what do we have here? We weren't really searching you. We were just cataloging you. And look what we found, right? That's the big loophole there. So it started with a guy had heroin in a matchbook. And he was under arrest for one thing, and they found the heroin in the matchbook, and the court said, tough, they didn't need a warrant to search his pocket after he was under arrest. Well, now they're extending that to a smartphone that the judges in 68 or whenever could have never imagined, that you would have all of your persons, papers, and effects, and associations, and everything. All on one handheld or, you know, pocket-held computer on your person at all times, including your GPS at all times. And so that was the context of that, is the cops using an arrest to search people's smartphones and collect reams of data without warrants. And then, so what are the courts going to say about this now? You know, how does the old law apply to the new technology? This kind of thing. And Gelman is absolutely right here. The Washington Post, Barton Gelman, who just is the Pulitzer Prize winning yesterday. Barton Gelman from the Washington Post. I mean, there's just no question. I mean, in fact, if you're bad on this, you're just a bad person. You're some craven suck-up to the U.S. state if you actually prefer Michael Hayden's position to Barton Gelman's. You must be terrified of your own shadow if you're going to let these bureaucrats tell you that if it wasn't for them violating your rights all day, you'd be dead. And that you're supposed to be against this First Amendment-protected reporter for telling you the truth about what they're doing to you. And you know what's funny is, you know, confirmation bias happens to the best of us. I forget that there are people who really hate Edward Snowden and really think that he did the wrong thing. And I mean people who aren't government employees, but who, you know, that's really what they think. Including kids in this room who love Hayden so much. Wow, that Hayden sure does have some interesting anecdotes. And, you know, their disposition is to side with the state, to look for things that Hayden says that can make them feel better about agreeing with him, about being on his side in this. Because they want to be a national security official one day, these students at George Washington University. They want to be on the inside of this power. They want to identify with the state. You can hear all their ridiculous giggles. Maybe I'm being unfair to them, but I don't think so. Again, you can turn the show off and go watch C-SPAN yourself, which, you know, might be well-advised decision on your part. But anyway, it seems pretty obvious to me that we need 1,000 Snowdens. It seems like this would be obvious to everyone. You know, I'm shocked, but then kind of not shocked at the same time to find out that people really buy into 2 minutes hate type thing against the hero Edward Snowden for bringing this truth to us by way of these great reporters. But the fact of the matter is, there's so much secrecy. As Gelman put it, it's a one-way mirror now. They have total information awareness on us. And we have basically no idea what they're really up to at all. We're like, you know, even the best informed of us on this show and my guests and whoever, whatever's the best information you can find out there, we're still, you know, to a great degree, we're kind of like Kremlinologists of old, you know, frozen out of any kind of real insider account and just doing our best to make sense of what they're doing from the outside. And yet, at the same time, they have almost unlimited ability to track everything that we do. I mean, imagine, seriously, man, the location data of your cell phone, where at least what they're willing to admit is they have 5 years of records of everywhere you've been. Everywhere you've been. And everyone who was in the same room as you. Ever. And then they can just weave their little conspiracy theories from there, man. You hear how they talk. This guy's linked to this guy, linked to this guy. It's way out of control right there. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for thebumpersticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. Thebumpersticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. Thebumpersticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here. Alright, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. And yeah, I feel like an idiot, because, you know, usually, I mean, not that you care how I feel about anything, but anyway, it's my show, I can complain about whatever I want, including myself. Usually when I space out and forget what the hell I was going to say, I remember later. But I'm racking my brain. I was trying to, you know, win friends and influence people by granting as much of Hayden's argument as I possibly could before I refuted the rest of it. But I can't for the life of me remember what he said that was even halfway plausible or acceptable at all. I think there was one thing that sort of sounded good for a second until you look at it, really. It was something like that, you know? And now I'm thinking back, I'm like, what was it? I think this guy's a joke. I think Michael Hayden should stay inside. You know? Now what the hell he's talking about? Alright, well, anyway. Hey, listen, some of the Snowden documents, really important stuff, and I think people kind of roll their eyes and go, yeah, well, we already know that, but not really don't know that. I mean, you assume that, but some of this stuff that Greenwald published at, First Look there, at The Intercept, were about infiltrating political groups online. And making everybody hate each other. And, you know, I don't know. We talked about on the show then. It's kind of fun for me to see the PowerPoint presentation, right? The really dumbed down graphical view. Some chart of how to make the American people hate each other. So that power can continue getting along. And getting away with whatever they want to get away with. Yeah, you think you have the Fourth Amendment in common, but did you hear what he said about labor unions? Yeah, well, you guys think that you have peace in common, but do you know where he stands on abortion? Oh, no, nuclear war. All of a sudden, everybody hates each other, and everybody's a red stater and a blue stater and all this crap. But meanwhile, come on, guys. In 2014, it ought to be so obvious, the real division here. It is, like the lefties call it. It's the 99%. And in fact, I think that they should have all along, and I think I said this from the beginning, although maybe I didn't say it all along, but I think they would have been really smart PR-wise, too, and realistic, too, to call it the 99.9%. It's all the millionaires and thousandaires and less. It's all of us versus the billionaires. Better put, it's the billionaires versus everyone else. Maybe if you got hundreds of millions of dollars, you're corrupt enough in your heart and you want to be like the billionaires bad enough that you might join the war party. Go ahead. But I think for the most part, most plain old millionaires, they're just business people who want to get by. Which would much rather just have peace and security and have, you know, a lot less for people to fight about so that they can sell more to everybody of whatever it is. You know, it wasn't the soda companies that pushed for empire in the Middle East. They're the ones who lost. Like, for example, that's a good example, Scott. Thank you. In Iraq, they used to all drink Pepsi. Not anymore. Now none of them drink Pepsi or ever will again. So I don't know exactly how much money that was, but you can see how, and now, you know, actually there have been foreign policies, pretty brutal foreign policies in favor of Pepsi in the past too, I think, wrangling people's waterworks and stuff like that. So I'm not saying they're pure, but anyway, the way I see it is you got the war party and then you got everybody else. You got the centralizers, the empire, the national security state, and all of its bureaucrats, and the military-industrial complex, and all of its, you know, PR front men and whatever. And then there's everybody else. So I guess that's a little bit more than 0.1%. It's not just the billionaires. It's the state that they use against all the rest of us, too. But still, it seems so obvious to me that, you know, whatever your opinion is of Medicare or Medicaid, which I think those are real problems and should be never should have been created and should be abolished as soon as possible. I think that, man, we got to wait. We gotta not care about that for a little while. And you know what? Maybe the empire won't matter either once the dollar breaks, because Medicaid breaks the empire down, you know, at the end of the day. Maybe that's how it'll play out. But it seems to me, priority-wise, that our government, proactively, as they call it, killing people, that's gotta be stopped immediately. At all costs. Come on. The empire has got to be rolled back. Hegemony in Eastern Europe? Nah. That's got to be aborted completely. That's something that all Americans ought to be able to agree on if you don't work for Lockheed at the Fighter Works. Or if you're not a banker at JPMorgan Chase commissioning the payment from the state to Lockheed and taking your percentage off the top. Whatever your game is, if you're just a regular person, you got to be against that. Let Eastern Europe take care of Eastern Europe. Give me a break. Taking money out of your pocketbook for this. And risking your life. Messing around in other people's business where they don't know enough about what they're doing and who they're messing with. And where they don't have the ability really to contain the consequences of their adventures either. Same thing for the Middle East, same thing for the invasion of Africa and the pivot to Asia and all the rest. The empire is madness. They talk about, oh, the Constitution isn't a suicide pact. Well, it depends where on the continuity you say we went from republic to empire. Some say it was at the Constitutional Convention. Some say, you know, the war against Mexico or the Civil War or the Spanish-American War or World War II or the Terror War, wherever you think they really broke from the Constitution. But it isn't the Constitution. That's our suicide pact. We have one, but that ain't it, I don't think. Well, I don't know. Could be that, yeah, the Constitution is the suicide pact. It's what created this empire, and so, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Again, it depends on your point of view exactly. But anyway, it's the empire that's killing us. It does seem to me, within the realm of possibility, conceivable, you know, I don't know, that you could have a limited temporary constitutional republic that does not become a blood-soaked world empire of corruption and dishonesty. But, you know, I don't know. Apparently not. You know? It doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like there's anything, any such thing as a limited constitutional republic at all. Now, start scratching my head about it. But anyway, we should all certainly be able to put our finger on what is worst about our government and agree that that's got to be the priority to solve. Abortion is a hell of a standoff, but damn it, just fight it out in 5 years or something from now, okay? Right now, the priority has got to be abolish the empire and reinstate the Bill of Rights. Simple as that, right? Defund each and every last fusion center and Homeland Security too. Take the machine guns and the armored personnel carriers away from the cops and the black ski masks that they hide behind like terrorists. Take away the power of the president. Because Obama never really renounced it, of course. Mr. Loophole. His claimed authority to torture people and start wars against countries that have never attacked us. To expand NATO. To build more rail guns and more nuclear weapons. And tap all our phones and all the rest. That's what's got to be undone. That's it. You want America to last till your kids or your grandkids, have a safe, secure, you know, place to laugh and play and have Thanksgiving dinners to come, you know, for years on out. I don't know why I picked Thanksgiving, you know, it's springtime, but you know what I mean. Don't you have some kind of vague picture of 80 years from now or something what you might want to think that your family will still be living strong and doing good in a peaceful, secure society? Well, you can't have that and a world empire and a deadly lawless police state, can you? Argue all damn day about Medicaid and bunch of crap. Bunch of distraction. Bunch of exploitation of your culture war. Straight out of the Snowden documents. Straight out of the NSA files. Here's how we make them hate each other. Pick a fight between country and rock and roll. Pick a fight between Christians and everybody else. Between Protestants and Catholics. I think it's funny that they try to pick a fight about gay marriage so much that the whole society was like, eh, what do I care? Even evangelicals, young evangelicals now, are majority in support of gay marriage. Haha. Boy, looks like your culture war sort of took a dive on that one, man. And, you know, good, people ought to be able to marry whoever they want. I would rather have government out of marriage altogether and let it be a personal contractual thing, and then it doesn't matter. I mean, then the court's only role would be to recognize not any specific name of a ceremony, but just the contractual obligations that people enter into when they get married. You know, I don't know. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Point being that it used to be, ooh, well, homos shouldn't be able to do things because I think it's icky and so screw their rights and blah, blah, blah. And now the attitude is, man, what do I care? Do what you want. Adam and Steve or whatever, who cares? Nobody cares about that. Anyway, but so they'll go on to the next one. They'll pick something else to fight about as much as they can and try to always divide. You know what's funny? Look, for example, at David Corn over there at Mother Jones magazine, and I think he's at The Nation, too. Typical Democrat. Here he's got some good things about Rand Paul, but all he can try to do is hurt Rand Paul with it. He even, at David Corn, and thanks for, I'm sorry, I forget who sent me the link. I think somebody tweeted me the link, and appreciate it. David Corn went and dug up my interview of Rand Paul where I'm trying to get him to be anti-torture enough, and he's not. But for David Corn's purposes, that doesn't matter. Ooh, look at how radically anti-torture and anti-Cheney Rand Paul is. Now let's you right-wingers fight. But wouldn't it be just as easy for Dave, which is cool too. I mean, I want to see Rand Paul and the Dick Cheney Republicans fight too, but not so that the wonderful Democrats can win like David Corn, but because I want to see the torture mongers lose. And I want to see Rand Paul be heroic like he has the opportunity to be. Not like in his Washington Post piece today, saying all options, including military options, must remain on the table for dealing with Iran's civilian, peaceful nuclear program. Anyway, safeguarded nuclear program. So David Corn, I mean, the question is obvious, right? What do you love more? The possibility of an anti-torture president, or the possibility of a Democratic president? You know? What's David Corn? What does he care about most? He would rather have Hillary torture people than Rand Paul not, of course. And anyway, I don't know. It just seems like the mass murder and the torture and the killing and the lying and the destruction of the Bill of Rights forever and the target assassinations and all would be the priority we could all agree on, right? Right? Even Ike agrees with me, for Christ's sake. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Key Score, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Apparently, even though I quit Liberty Express, Alan Butler is still playing old shows. Is that right? So people are emailing me saying, why is this an old show? Well, I'm live right now, the 16th of April. If that's what you're hearing. Oh, well. So anyway, I'm at dailypaulradio.com and I'm at apsradionews.com as well as scotthorton.org/listen and scotthorton.org/chat. Yeah, let's listen to some Anthrax for a second. All right, hey, by the way, guys, I sure would appreciate it if you would patronize my sponsors. Go and subscribe to the Future Freedom Foundation's journal, The Future of Freedom. It's really good, man. And then also, it's not a website, it's a journal. So you can have it laying around your living room so your guests will pick it up and start reading it and become libertarians and stuff. That's fff.org/subscribe. Support the Council for the National Interest. Supports an even-handed policy in the Middle East. Read The War State. Buy The War State on audiobook. It's no longer audibletrial.com/Scott. It's audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. And then you can get any audiobook you want for free as your trial. If you sign up there at audibletrial, not just audible.com, but audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show. I recommend you get The War State, which is just out in audiobook. It's put together by Listen and Think Audio. Derek Sheriff, who's a really cool guy there, and is working to put out as much libertarian-type text as he can in audio format there, in audiobook. So that's brand new, and you can just, if you click the Audible link in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org, it'll take you right to it there. And then, of course, you can also just get the book. Wall Street Window, that's Mike Swanson. He's the author of The War State. He also does investment advice, former hedge fund manager. If you have enough money to invest and try to keep safe somewhere or something, I would be paying attention to what he's saying very closely if I were you. I pay attention somewhat closely now, but I don't really have any money. But if I had money, I would definitely be watching Mike Swanson like a hawk. For what the hell is really going on out there and what to do about it. And he's got a pretty proven track record, and I would say go and look into it, wallstreetwindow.com. And then, of course, you gotta, if you can, if you're into political action at all, I urge you, especially if you have any group, if you have a group of 25 people, which is, you know, our local bowling league for peace or whatever it is, anything at all that you can do to join up with the Turn It Off Project. The NSA's Achilles heel, nullify the NSA. And that is such a big deal. And I would try to drive as many of you guys to the offnow.org site as I possibly could. You know, you can't help it, right? Wherever you are, you know somebody whose uncle is that congressman, or at least that state congressman or something, right? You know, somebody whose cousin knows a guy, something. Try to do something. Do anything that you can. See if you can at least make this an issue in your town. Take a whole group of people and make an appointment and go and bring it to the attention of your editorial board of your local paper and see if you can make it an issue out of it among, you know, the civil society in your city. You know, the pseudo-hoity-toity, the ruling class of your town, you know? and make it their thing. Hey, you know what would be really hip and neat and cool and 21st century and young and Facebooky of you guys would be if you would get on board with this NSA's Achilles heel. Turn it off. Offnow.org. And see what you can do to obstruct their violations of our rights. That's a good way to secure your spot on the city council from now on. Right? You know, lie to them. Make them do the right thing, somehow. Offnow.org, that's really important. And then, of course, if you sign up for Liberty Classroom, which is Tom Woods and then his handpicked favorite professors teaching history and economics and everything else, I get a little bit of a kickback for that if you do that. And then, if you're like me, you know, I don't know. Honestly, I'll be honest with you. The guy does all right selling these. But with the promo code Scott Horton, apparently not so much. And I really can't figure it out. Because it seems like, if you like me at all, if you can stand me, then you must love Harry Brown and Murray Rothbard, right? And Ron Paul, most likely? I mean, I love Harry Brown, man. I love Ron Paul. And Murray Rothbard, too, dude. I mean, that's some good stuff right there, you know? I don't know. So I got the Harry Brown statue. And if I had money, one of those things where if I had money, hell yes, I would have one of each of these statues of libertarian heroes that my heroes think. And they're not very expensive. And they're great. And so you ought to support them and help support this show by supporting them. And also, have yourself a great little conversation piece in the form of a Harry Brown statue. Who's that? Or even better, get a Murray Rothbard statue. And then everyone will say, is that Henry Kissinger? And you can say, no, that's Murray Rothbard. Haven't you ever read Left and Right, The Prospects for Liberty? And then they'll say, no, that sounds like an extraordinarily compelling essay title. Where might I Google that? Google? And then you'll say, yes, Google. Left and Right, The Prospects for Liberty by Murray Rothbard. Everybody's got to read that. Some of us twice. And it'll all be because you have an awesome statue for myheroesthink.com. Right? Okay, good. And then you know what? If you like go-karts, and who doesn't like go-karts? But if you actually have a go-kart, then go to Go-Kart Galaxy at gokartgalaxy.com and get your parts from them. The online source for go-kart parts and mini-bike, and mini-bike parts, too. So that's certainly a certain percentage of every neighborhood's population counts for that. So those guys, and Web Dev Geeks, too, they do website work. If you need some website work done, Web Dev Geeks, I sell web ads to those guys. I ought to mention them on the show from time to time, even though I don't because I'm terrible, but they help support the show a little bit as well, so you know, do yourself a favor and patronize my sponsors, would you? I think that'd be great. And especially, you know, check this out, too. When it first started, I was flogging this all the time and making a big deal about it. But then I got lazy. But it's a really big deal. Amazon.com. If you buy anything off Amazon.com, and a lot of people buy everything off of Amazon.com, especially if that's you and you're just at Amazon.com all damn day, and so is your wife and your sister and everybody, then just have them stop by scotthorton.org/Amazon. You can even just bookmark that. You don't even have to bother going to my site. Just type in or bookmark scotthorton.org/Amazon, and that'll forward you on. Otherwise, you can just go to my site, and there's a link in the right-hand margin there, at the top of the right-hand margin, and a big Amazon logo there, depending on how good your ad blocker is. There's a logo, but there's definitely a link for you there. And then if you just go to scotthorton.org/Amazon, then I get a kickback from their end of the sale. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but they pay me a little bit of a kickback. That helps support the show as well. So I think I told y'all on the show, a guy bought a range, an oven and stovetop range, like you would win on The Price is Right. And he bought it from Amazon.com. And he later fessed up on Twitter and said, that was me. Yeah, cool. Hell yeah. And a lot of people have bought a lot of stuff that way. And man, I really appreciate it a lot. I mean, that's very thoughtful of you, really. Like, here, you got to go and spend some money on some stuff, and then, but you take the time to stop by my site first and work me into the deal somehow. That's very thoughtful of you, and I'm very grateful for it. So, and I appreciate your continued use of that link there and that address, scotthorn.org/Amazon. That really helps. And then, so, last but not least, should be first and foremost, I need more advertisers. I didn't mention Cash Into Coin because I was just going down my list of web ads on the right, but I just don't have a banner for them yet because I just haven't gotten around to it because I suck. But it's actually expresscoin.com now for buying Bitcoins, and they're really reliable. I talked with Mark Edge from Free Talk Live all about this, and he went and tested them out and bought a few thousand dollars worth of Bitcoins, I believe, put some cash in their account, sent them the receipt, and his Bitcoin address, and blam, they paid him in Bitcoins just like they swore they would, and the proper amount just like it was supposed to be in the deal and everything else. And they seem like some really good guys there too. That's expresscoin.com for all your Bitcoin buying needs. And I need more like that. So if you have a company, you have a group, Veterans for Peace used to support, I'm going to try to see if I can get them back on board. But anything along those lines, I'm happy to have you. Try to support your work as best I can. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
Shut up, man. No, I am not playing this. I do not care about that. Let me know when... No, I shouldn't say that either. Anyway, I'm just going to sit here and mumble, hatred, contempt, unreasonable levels of hatred. And then maybe... Is that part of the news over, do you think, yet? Let's see. There you go. That's better. I hate top of the hour news, no matter whose it is. Do people really care about that crap? Really? I mean, I know junior high school kids do, but anybody else? Remember Bill Hicks? Is there that much babysitting money being passed around right now? I don't understand it. What the hell is this? These are our rock stars. All right, well, so here, yeah, let me say that. You know what? Here's what I want to do. I was going to do this anyway, and then coincidentally I got emails this morning which just helped remind me to not forget. But it's in my notes anyway. It's in my notes. My friend Phil sent me this a long time ago. It was a column in a New Jersey paper. But then actually it turns out it's from a letter to the Economist, I think. No, the Financial Times. Pardon me. And it's a little bit out of date because the Muslim Brotherhood has been overthrown by the pro-Saudi dictatorship in Egypt now, after a short-lived Arab Spring there in Egypt. But anyway, it's still fun, and it's still illustrative, however you like saying it. Letter to the Financial Times. Sir, Iran is backing Assad. The Gulf states are against Assad. Assad is against the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is against General Sisi. But the Gulf states are pro-Sisi, which means they are against the Muslim Brotherhood. Iran is pro-Hamas, but Hamas is backing the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama is backing the Muslim Brotherhood, yet Hamas is against the U.S. Which, not really, but anyway. Gulf states are pro-U.S., But Turkey is with the Gulf states against Assad. Yet Turkey is pro-Muslim Brotherhood against General Sisi. And General Sisi is being backed by the Gulf states. Welcome to the Middle East, and have a nice day. And you notice he didn't even touch Lebanon. Forget it. Oh, wait, did he mention Hezbollah in there? No, he didn't even mention Hezbollah. Forget it. At that point, just throw up your hands and forget it. Lebanon is so divided that their constitution actually says, and I'm getting this entirely wrong, but close enough to make the point that, the president has to be a Maronite Christian and the vice president has to be a Chaldean Christian and the secretary of state has to be a Shiite and the secretary of defense has to be a Muslim and whatever the hell. It's that kind of thing. That's the way the cabinet is drawn, is all by ethnic faction and ethno-religious faction. And they actually have it written into their constitution. And of course, then they fight about it all the time because the constitution was written back when, and now the demographics have changed and people feel underrepresented and all that kind of crap. Still better than civil war all the time. But, the reason I thought of Lebanon, of course, is because that's the famous Ronald Reagan quote about how he was wrong to think that he ought to intervene in Beirut. And he learned the lesson the hard way at the expense of the lives of 238 Marines and then a bunch of French and other soldiers who were there with him. That he was wrong that Middle Eastern politics are just too Levantine, huh? The Levant, right? That's that region of the Eastern Mediterranean, Syria, Lebanon, North Israel type area, right? The Levant. These Levantine politics, or however the hell you're supposed to say that if you're a smart, educated person, they're just too much. Who can navigate it all? Who can pick which side to blow up in favor of which side and to what good end? And who could count on that? And who would try? That's one of my favorite Ron Paul anecdotes, by the way, about that intervention in Beirut. Ron Paul was in the Congress in the 70s, then in the 80s, and then again in the 90s and 2000s. And in 1983, it's in his book, A Foreign Policy of Freedom, which is a collection of his foreign policy speeches. And you can see him go from a little bit more right-wing to much more libertarian and peacenik pretty quick there. But anyway, in 1983, he says, I'm paraphrasing very quickly, a series of speeches by Ron Paul on the House floor. First, he says, Mr. Reagan, do not put troops on the ground in Lebanon. You are messing around. We should not be messing around. There are too many warring factional sides, and they're trading alliances all the time, and this is a bad place to intervene, and you ought to not intervene. You know, on one hand, the PLO is the worst people in the world. On the other hand, you're intervening to save them from our sock puppets, the Israelis, this whole... None of this makes any sense. Just stop it. Don't do it. And then the next speech is, Mr. Reagan, I told you not to put the Marines into Lebanon. You should get them out of there as quick as you can. I'm not making this up. This is really in there. You check me, man. I swear to God, it's in there. In fact, it's in Anthony Gregory's review of Ron Paul's book as well. The book is A Foreign Policy of Freedom. And he says, now that you've put your troops on the ground in Lebanon, Mr. Reagan, please get them out before it's too late and something horrible happens and we get drawn further into this thing. Just stop it. And then the next speech is, taps playing. Mr. Reagan, I tried to tell you, now that 230-something American Marines have been blown up by a truck bomb, will you please go ahead and call off this stupid mission where we should not be intervening over there? The Hawks all want you to double down, Mr. Reagan, but you don't have to. You're Ronald freaking Reagan. And then the next speech is, congratulations, Mr. Reagan. You finally did the right thing. Thank you. Thank you. You did the right thing. You got out of Lebanon instead of doubling down. You withdrew like you should do, like you should have never went there in the first place, etc. Lesson, should have never went there in the first place, etc.
At least Ronald Reagan had, I don't know if the political courage or just the political capital to say, hey, I'm Ronald Reagan. You can't call me a sissy. I'm the big tough guy staring down the Russian bear and all this crap. If I want to pull troops in or out of Lebanon, that's what I'll do is my little troop movements. And I don't care what you say at Commentary Magazine about it. He didn't have to worry about that. If he'd been a Democrat, maybe it would have been different, you know? I don't know. But it's just an example. You know, it's funny. I mean, you tell me. I don't know. You guys consume these interviews probably even better than I do, you know? I got ADD over here. I try my best. But doesn't it seem like there's a lot of idiocy behind the Syria policy, for example? You and I are sitting here, you know, doing the facepalm, saying, what in the hell are you guys doing backing the al-Nusra Front and ISIS when these are the bad guys from the Iraq War? These are the guys who've sworn loyalty, all of them, to Ayman al-Zawahiri and al-Qaeda and their goals. These are our only real enemies in the world. These guys are willing to die to carry out a kamikaze mission against our civilian targets. Man, if our government was legitimate at all, and if it had one mandate in the world at all, it might be arresting and or shooting these dudes, man. Or, by the furthest stretch, hiring Assad to do it. At least leaving him alone to do it. It's crazy for them to sit here after years of this and say, well, we're trying to back the moderates and we're sending all these weapons. Really? Because I got jihadists with TOW missiles now. Speaking of Ronald Reagan, these are what he sold to the Ayatollah through the Israelis. These hypocrites, all of them. But now, I mean, TOW missiles, these are anti-tank missiles. These are badass missiles. This is not a shoulder-fired RPG. And, you know, the reporting is, I don't know who can vouch for it exactly, but the reporting is coming out that, yeah, they've got the TOW missiles all right. They got them from the Saudis with American permission to the Saudis to go ahead and funnel them on. And, you know, even David Sanger, and I know confirmation bias, blah, 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 but it sure did seem legit to me. You go double check and form your own opinion. I don't care. I'm just me talking here. You're you. But it sure looked to me like even David Sanger was acknowledging, I say even because his job is toeing the line in the New York Times, man. And even he was acknowledging that the FSA doesn't really fight so much or really exist very much. They sort of are an excuse for jihadis to get guns. The jihadis are getting all the guns. And then they're trying to break off good al-Qaeda from bad al-Qaeda. Are you kidding me? What in the hell is this? Oh, al-Nusra are the moderates now? Is that right? Because they're not ISIS. But what's bad about ISIS? It's not that they behead people and do suicide attacks. So does al-Nusra. The only thing that's bad with ISIS is that they've fallen out of favor with Ayman al-Zawahiri. Well, for Christ's sake, if anything, those are the guys we should be trying to hire to fight against Nusra that's still loyal to him. Oh, no, let's just call him the Islamic Front. Whole thing, man. Maybe it's brilliant. Maybe it's genius. Maybe they're completely self-aware with every last bit of what they're up to in this project. And you know what? Just like Michael Oren said, we don't care, it's worth it to weaken Iran. But then if that's true, then why are they working so hard to get this nuclear deal with Iran? And I don't think it's just a pretext to fail so they could justify bombing. I mean, I think they're really trying to get this deal done. I guess I could be wrong about that, but the whole thing is so inconsistent and stupid, you know? It's puzzling to me, it really is.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm on APSRadioNews.com. APS Radio News at APSRadioNews.com. Also at DailyPaulRadio.com and ScottHorton.org/listen. And then, you know, hopefully you can find me on Stitcher and TuneIn and all that crap I barely understand. I don't know. Hey, check this out, man. David Petraeus, speaking of confirmation bias, even David Petraeus is saying that prospect of a final nuclear deal with Iran is now maybe better than 50-50. Former general in charge of Iraq, former commander of CENTCOM, former general in charge of Afghanistan, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now here he is giving a talk at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and he said the prospect is actually now maybe better than 50-50, which is not something we would have said even a few weeks ago, much less months ago, Petraeus said. I think that must be kind of hyperbole. What's happened the last few weeks that hadn't been happening for the last few months? He means since November compared to before November, probably. I don't know. I'm actually starting to believe that an agreement is possible, and it could be that it's possible before this particular six-month deadline expires. Back in December, President Obama said he thought the chances weren't that good. If you ask me, I'd say it's more than 50-50, but no. So, well, let me see. Mayor Dagan here, the former head of Mossad, who has expressed a deep skepticism in the past about the utility of a military strike on Iran, said any agreement with Iran would be problematic because he believes the Iranians will not live up to their end of the bargain. Well, so who cares about that, what he says? There's a piece actually at antiwar.com today by Ali Gharib about, should we listen to the Israelis when it comes to this stuff? And he's very kid gloves about it, too, but he still says no. Here's Shimon Peres saying, oh, yeah, you know, the Iranians are not cooperating. And then, okay, that's a pretty declarative statement. Let's go see what the IAEA says. Hey, IAEA, are they cooperating on implementing the interim deal or aren't they? And the IAEA says, yeah, they're doing great. What's the problem? Only the Israelis try to say that everything's not going great, but everyone else knows that everything's going great. The Iranians are implementing their end of the deal as much as they can. If you ask all the wonks, and including, I mean, I'm not talking about a bunch of hippies here. I'm talking about the wonks and, you know, people who have a bureaucracy for a brain. Their worry is that maybe we have so many sanctions on Iran that it'll be too difficult to unwind them fast enough to really satisfy the deal. In other words, they will not want to make the kind of concessions that would satisfy the Americans because the Americans will simply be unable to cancel the sanctions regime in an equitable trade-off kind of a way. It's just too many sanctions gone on for too long in a row. Too many job holders implementing the sanctions. Too many rules that need new rules written to rescind them. Too many laws that need to be repealed by Congress, even. That's what the wonks are worried about. That the sanctions on Iran are of such layers, such multi-layers, going back for so many years, that it'll be too hard to lift them all in a reciprocal enough way to get what we want out of the Iranians. And then, again, going back to the start here, what is it that they want from the Iranians, who already have a safeguarded facility, a nuclear program there? All of it is safeguarded. All the accusations against them are nonsense. Just go read Gareth Porter, man, for starters. It's all a bunch of crap. Oh, at Parchin, I bet they're exploding nuclear test bombs and whatever. Nuh-uh, shut up. Oh, that's a bunch of crap. David Albright in his pink tarp. All they've got is a safeguarded nuclear program. So what are we trying to accomplish here? Well, we want to move them from a safeguards agreement to... We want to add an additional protocol to the safeguards agreement. Uh-huh. That's what all this is about? You want their safeguarded, verified civilian nuclear program to be extra safeguarded and extra verified. Okay. It doesn't really sound like that's too much to ask. It certainly doesn't sound like they're actually worried about some nuclear weapons program even existing over there. They certainly put that to the side. Now they admit they're just trying to keep it from ever being a nuclear weapons program. Or, as Kerry put it the other day, he's trying to increase the length of their breakout time to a longer period of time. If they decided to start making nukes, we want to make it more difficult rather than easier for them to get there from where they are now. Well, so what? Sheldon Richman has a great article today at FFF.org, in fact, about how the Ayatollahs in Iran since the revolution have banned weapons of mass destruction. They never made chemical weapons, and they never made nuclear weapons, and a big part of that is because the Ayatollah said it was against Islamic law, which is, of course, convenient because it fit with their strategy. It didn't make any sense to try to arm up with nuclear weapons against the United States or Israel when we're already way ahead of them by the hundreds in the case of Israel, the thousands in the case of America. Maybe they would, you know, consider getting one nuke to keep Saddam out, but even the whole time they were fighting Saddam, they had chemicals, but they never mixed it all together and made and deployed chemical weapons, even when Saddam Hussein was using American satellites to target their people in his aggressive war backed by the United States. The Ayatollah, and that was the mean old Ayatollah, twice as mean as the new Ayatollah, and he didn't use chemical weapons then. And they haven't developed them since. And as Gareth Porter shows in his book, Manufactured Crisis, they never did have a nuclear weapons program. Perfectly consistent with the Ayatollah's decrees. And now, don't get me wrong. Some theocrat is meaningless to me. His moral authority is a joke to me. He's nothing but a politician to me. And so I'm not saying that anyone should take his word for anything, and I don't think Gareth Porter or Sheldon Richman say so either. They just say that, hey, look, isn't it interesting how all actual facts in space-time would seem to indicate that this Ayatollah's word is law, and that it wasn't a deception when he was pretending to ban nukes. He was really banning nukes. With his ultimate supreme leader authority as the head religious and state figure. Not that he's the ultimate dictator of Iran, but he certainly has veto power over whether they're making nukes or not, and especially if he makes it a fatwa, and he did. So did the Ayatollah before him, and then the new Ayatollah has now, you know, double reaffirmed that. Man, hey, chat room guys, can you hear the guy with the leaf blower outside? It's pretty loud. I'm looking at the bars on Adobe Audition as it's recording as I'm going out live here, and it doesn't look like it's picking it up, but my ear hole sure is picking it up pretty loud, so I'd be interested to know whether you can hear it or not. I mean, I guess I just got to continue on anyway. James Bovard's coming up in just a few minutes, by the way, so that's your reward for listening this long to the show today, in spite of the fact that it ain't that good. Can you hear that? Which, you know, leaf blowers are important if you have a lot of leaves to blow, you know. I guess I just need storm windows. Well, anyway. Here's what I really think. I think if the President of the United States decides to draw himself up to his full height and decree that, damn it, we are getting this peace deal through, then he can have whatever he wants. If he can start a war with Libya, then he can conclude peace with Iran. And if he fails, then I don't want to hear any excuses whatsoever. And in fact, if he fails, that should only be one of the articles of impeachment against him for having an opportunity to finally put this bogus conflict behind us and blowing it. That's a high crime, if you ask me. It's a pretty vague term in the Constitution, isn't it? You know how Democrats love vague constitutional terms. I mean, I'm sure if they wanted to say felony, they would have said felony, right? How about the high crime of pissing me off? Filthy son of a bitch. Sounds like, you know, I would vote to remove him. But, you know, that's why they don't make me a senator, you know, I don't know. That would be hilarious if they did, wouldn't it? For a little while. Oh, thank God the drums are playing. Alright. Oh, I wanted to make fun of all the neocons for blaming Max Blumenthal for this neo-Nazi attack. Oh well, that's too stupid to even acknowledge, really, isn't it? So who cares? We're going to be right back with Jim Bovard here in a sec. Other Scott Horton will be on the show tomorrow. Won't that be nice?
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, all Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
So me and Jim are sitting here talking off the air. And he's dropping these horrible, you know, curse words. No, just one, but it was the big one. And then that reminded me, I actually dreamed that about Jim being on my show and cursing. And me going, oh no, he keeps saying bad words and I can't make him stop. I'm kind of a kook, I guess. I think I already guessed that and now it's certain. I'm a kook. All right, well, anyway, Jim still likes me. Welcome to the show. How are you doing, Jim?
Hey, doing good, Scott.
I hope I'm not sorry, too kooky for you, but that's pretty kooky, ain't it?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sorry that your memories of our past shows are giving you nightmares.
All right, well, you just behave yourself, all right? Well, yeah.
No, well, hey, I'll try to be a Boy Scout.
Yeah, well, sure. Hey, you guys ought to read all of Jim's books. They're really good. You got the Fair Trade Fraud, and you got the Farm Fiasco, and you've got Lost Rights and Freedom in Chains and Terrorism and Tyranny, the Bush Betrayal, and Attention Deficit Democracy, which is so freaking good, man. You got to read that book. It's so good. And then also his great memoir as well. And then it's right on the tip of my brain, the memoir is Public Policy Hooligan. And he's called that because, and seriously, go check out Jim Bovard's Wikipedia page. You can see the collected denunciations of the heads of virtually every bureaucracy, every federal bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. They absolutely hate this guy's guts, and for good reason. It's because they suck, and he's always writing about it in places where important eyeballs can read, like in the Wall Street Journal, or here, this one is in the Washington Times. Our cluster bomb Congress plants legislative IEDs under unsuspecting American citizens. What are we talking about here? You gave the horrible example here, which I had only seen headlines of and didn't really read up on, but I was glad to see that you covered it here, Jim. What is this?
Well, the cluster bomb, our cluster bomb Congress refers to how Congress passes these very thick laws, and they're full of hundreds or thousands of different provisions. People don't really pay attention to them, and then years later, it's like they've scattered bombs across the landscape, And like with a cluster bomb, it can be dropped and 6 months or a year later, you can have children outside playing. The children get too close, the bomb explodes, it explodes, the kids are maimed or killed. In the same way, you've got these provisions and laws that scatter across the landscape and wreck people's lives.
Yeah.
For instance, there was a one-line provision in the 2008 Farm Bill, which basically waived the statute of limitation for the government going after people they had supposedly overpaid in the past. And because of that, you had the you've had federal agencies going after people for debts that were more than 10 years old, often what the government didn't have any evidence that people actually had been overpaid. And in many cases, they were going after children for money their parents had received, even though their parents had died long ago, and there was no evidence, there was no way to fight it. And what the government would come in here and do is just seize people's tax returns, their state returns, their state income refunds, their federal income tax refunds. And so people would simply get a notice that the government had taken their tax return and put it in its pocket. And it'd be almost impossible to fight this.
Yeah, well, first of all, we've actually covered the cluster bombs laying all over the ground in Laos that
spoke
to hundreds of people
and
a year
on
this show. That's a real thing, man. Afghanistan, too, cluster bombs laying around.
Afghanistan, Iraq, the first time I focused on that was in Kosovo.
Yeah.
Because I was absolutely mortified that the U.S. Planes were dropping these cluster bombs on marketplaces in Serbia. It was barbaric. It was serving no military purpose. It was simply to terrorize the Serbians into surrendering Kosovo to the UN and whatever. And it was, I was amazed that there was not a far greater backlash by the American media and the American public against the U.S. government, you know, dropping bombs cluster bombs in marketplaces.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that it's 45 years after the bombings over Laos and that they're still killing hundreds of people every year, you know, farmers.
Wow.
And, of course, it's little kids that go that pick them up, even though they've been told 10 times, don't ever touch that. What's a little kid do? Pick it up. Torn
apart. What kids do, sure.
Huge. And it's a great analogy because, you know, I think for whatever reason, people are just, you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind for some reason. Maybe it's not the neighbors that you knew that these terrible things happened to, but there's a way, like you mentioned somebody owns some wetlands property or something and the government just comes and pulls out some arcane rule and completely ruins them. There's a certain part of the population, at least, that just assumes some kind of guilt or greed or sin or something on the part of the persecuted here because, you know, sort of like Iraq did with 9/11, or else why would we be invading them? Why would the government be clamping down on this rancher or on that, fish farmer or whoever, if they weren't really threatening this animal or doing some terrible thing? And people really don't recognize the actual suffering. You know, I mean, a cluster bomb is only a little bit dramatic compared to people going to prison. Being fined for their entire life savings and more than they'll ever be able to pay in their whole life, their business destroyed, their family maybe split up over it, and this kind of thing. We're talking about the government ruining people's lives. The one shot they got at a life, and a bunch of thug feds coming and having their way with them over nothing. People who aren't criminals, people are just regular people. And so
I think it's
important to call it like a cluster bomb like that. Like, hey, this matters, man. Even if it's not you or your cousin, it's still somebody, and it ain't fair.
And a part of the what's really nasty about this is that it's done through administrative procedures. And the government simply just seizes the money, puts it in its government accounts, and then the person later sent a notice. And it's very difficult to fight this in court. There was a front-page Washington Post piece on this last Friday, and so on Monday afternoon, the Social Security Administration said it was going to temporarily desist from seizing the debts of people that were debts were more than 10 years old. In many cases, these are debts of alleged debts of parents that the government has passed on to the kids. I'm blindsiding the kids on that. The law is still there, and the Social Security could resume this at any time once the media spotlight shifts to someplace else.
Yeah, and now, by the way, on this, when you say overpaid, it sure doesn't sound like there's even an implication of fault here. And then, of course, like you said, no proof required.
Right. It's untrue. It's just a claim that they make. But
absolutely. So, and in many cases, you have overpayments that were not due to the. First of all, there's a lot of overpayments that probably never happened. And second, a lot of the ones that did happen were probably the fault of the government, not of the person that got the money. But it doesn't matter because the government has this notion that it can go in and just seize people's money for on any reason, and that there's nothing more important than maximizing government revenue.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you could see how they would have a case if we were talking about a one in a million shot where the computer spit out the wrong decimal point. You know, Buttle turned to Tuttle, and somebody accidentally got $10 million dropped into their account for no reason or something. You don't have a right to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened to me a couple times with money from Nigeria.
Yeah, no, the government is always giving me $10 million accidentally, too, you know? But, I mean, if it was something like that, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, I mean, what you're talking about literally sounds like a nightmare. It sounds like something out of East Germany or something, where they're coming to people and saying, listen, we paid your mom too much in the 1970s. She's long dead. We can't prove it. We don't have to prove it. And all your money belongs to us now. And that's it. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way the government can seize an unlimited amount of a person's tax return this year and maybe the next year and the following year. It's a good reason to make sure that you don't have a tax refund coming. But it's there's such a brazen contempt for due process here. But a lot of folks don't realize this is how the government plays the game. The same thing happens in asset forfeiture proceedings where the government comes in and seizes property, and then the innocent owner has got a huge legal and financial burden in order to recapture the property.
Right, yeah, all the civil forfeiture. It's funny, I mean, you know, you can certainly see the bureaucratic interest in it from all agencies at all levels of government, that if there's a way that, you know, I'm sure once somebody got the idea that they could take criminal forfeiture and make it civil and still get away with just basically robbing people all day, that, you know, you can see why they would all want to do nothing but that all day long. But, geez, is it the attention deficit democracy? What is it where... That's just the way it is then. If that's the institutional interest, then that's the end of the argument. It seems like there would be some kind of pushback. I mean, I know from personal experience and like anecdote-based stuff that there are people who, you know, like the Waco fire or something, civil forfeiture is what really woke them up to the fact that you're not living in the Bill of Rights country you thought you were living in here, man. The things are corrupt and out of control, and how could it be that some poor Honduran lady gets her $50,000 that she worked so hard for and saved up for years to bring home, gets it all nabbed at the airport and can't ever see it again? And when even all sides admit that she probably wasn't really doing anything, but they can do it if they want, and just shrug. I mean... Where in the hell is the outrage over civil forfeiture after all this time, after 1,000 examples, 10,000 of innocent people being victimized like this?
Yeah, I mean, this is something which I was embarking on in the early 1990s and sporadically since then, but the horrendous outrages are still occurring, and every now and then there's some media coverage, some very good coverage by some journalists, by some TV stations, and some of the think tanks and legal groups have done great work on this, but this BS keeps going, and it's partly because government profits, and as soon as the government starts profiting, congressmen say, well, wait a minute, you know, here's some money for us to buy a re-election. It's hard to overestimate how complacent congressmen are about government crimes that profit the government.
Yep, yeah. Well, all right, well.
I said that line better than the article. I was trying to recall, what the hell did I say? And, you know, it was about half as long, and it was a lot smoother, but what the hell, you know?
Nah, you know, it's my fault, Jim, because I'm sitting here typing an email because somebody's telling me they're hearing an old show and not the show, and I'm writing, I'm talking to Bovard. You can't hear me talking to Bovard? And so, of course, I'm not hearing Bovard my damn self because I'm in the middle of typing. It's my fault. Sorry.
Just as long as you fix your headphones.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's my problem, too, is I got some wireless headphones that I ordered, and then they came broken. And I hate the wiry ones because they get in the way. I should be wearing
them. It makes for a very nice photo, though. The photo you've got on your website now of you leaning forward to the microphone looks great.
Oh, yeah, that's the KPFK setup there in L.A. I hate the headphones, though. They make my ears hurt. So I usually just go chaos style with the monitors in the back. But
I think you could find headphones that were not so tight.
Yeah. No, it's not that. It's the inside of my ears that hurt from them. And I don't want to go deaf because I like hearing things, you know? But
okay.
You're right, though, that it would improve the quality of the show for the medium term, for the immediate and the medium term, even if I go deaf as an old man. I'll be able to just get a cochlear implant at that point anyway, probably, right? I don't know.
I wasn't recommending that much of a sacrifice.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm going to go deaf so I can interview Jim Bovard, everybody. Stay tuned, and I'm going to come up with some actual good questions for him, and then it's going to be rad. JimBovard.com. Hang tight. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Jim Bovard, jimbovard.com and amazon.com. He's got a whole bunch of badass books for you there. Really good ones, man, I'm telling you. The most successful libertarian journalist in world history, I'm pretty sure. How do you like that, Jim?
Well, damn, I hope that's not true. I hope someone else has done better.
No way, man.
Well,
kick ass.
Thanks. Yeah. That's very kind.
No, seriously, attention deficit democracy, that thing is a masterpiece. You guys ought to get that. You ought to go to audibletrial.com/Scott Horton Show and get Attention Deficit Democracy by James Bovard. It's killer. You'll love it. And it's years out of date now, but that doesn't matter. It's so good. You'll want to hear it. And then, of course, his great new memoir is really a riot, too. All these knife fights with all these angry chicks and all this stuff is awesome.
Hey, it wasn't a knife fight because I didn't stab back.
Oh, okay, there you go. He was bobbing and weaving. They were stabbing, and he's still alive. So
I got long
right.
arms.
Yeah, he's okay. Anyway, he's got this piece today at the Washington Times. Our cluster bomb Congress plants legislative improvised explosive devices. Arcane laws lie dormant until exploding under unsuspecting Americans. And the thing of it is, it's just like that one guy wrote that one book, Three Felonies a Day, where really, it's just like in the old wives' tale. Any FBI agent could just pick any man off the street that he wants to nail and put in prison, and he can do it. There's no way that you could stop them. You're guilty of mail fraud just for opening your mailbox and receiving junk mail that they mandate you have to receive in the first place or whatever. They can always find something to crucify you if that's what they want to do. And I don't know. I think that maybe more and more people are getting the idea that the laws and all these criminal punishments really aren't necessarily for the criminals and keeping us good guys safe from those bad criminals. But it seems more and more like the state of the bad guys, and all of these laws are here for them to mess with us. If we haven't committed a crime, that's all right. They'll find an offense. They'll find a line we've crossed somewhere, some edict somewhere. And so, I don't know, can you give us some more examples of these, of, you know, regular people caught up in this kind of arcane rules and regulations that lead to such severe consequences, Jim?
Well, Scott, something I was waiting to hear you announce that you were planning to move to Colorado.
You know, I tried that once, and I hated it there, to tell you the God's honest
truth,
man.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more state we'll mark off the Scott Horton list.
Maybe Washington, though. It's beautiful up in Washington.
Say what?
Maybe Washington, though. It's beautiful up there.
Yes, and folks are friendly, and there's lots of elbow room, and if you love rain, you know, you can't find much more of it than up there. So there's a lot of different examples, and it's fascinating that the government's always creating new laws in spite of the failure of the old laws to make things better. But folks still have this notion that we have freedom because we've got freedom under the law. But what that means nowadays is simply to be free. Freedom to be fleeced by federal agencies or by federal agents who decide to commandeer your car or your other assets to file charges against you, which will bleed you financially dry to fight. And there's so many different trump cards that government has right now, and it's unfortunate. It's interesting. I've heard talk about how this is a libertarian moment, how the tide is shifting. I'm thinking like, you know, I don't see a lot of vacancies in federal prisons right now. I don't see a bunch of layoffs at the FBI or local police. I don't see the government cutting back the number of criminal laws. And it's nice that there are some at least surface changes, but I'm puzzled why so many folks are trying to claim a victory for libertarianism when the government has become far more punitive and is light years worse than even it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of that is just that right-wingers pretend to love liberty when Democrats are in power, but
that's part of it, yep.
We saw the same act in the 1990s, so we remember who our pseudo-friends were and then who they really became, you know, after when Bush was in power and they, you know, joined up with the Ashcroft Brigades, so...
Went to the other side of the barricades, a lot of them did.
Yep, and so, you know, it's great to have them back for the short term, but you can't really count them as real allies. Most of the time. Although, you know, it seems like we have reached a critical mass on some things from a libertarian point of view. We were talking about on the show earlier about gay rights and how even, I guess, young evangelicals anyway, according to the polls, are for gay marriage by, you know, in a majority anyway. I don't know about some, you know, super majority or anything, but at least by a simple majority are for gay marriage, which, it you know, that's... You know, a lot of progress, I think, to have right-wingers basically going ahead and shrugging and decided that they don't really mind after all. They thought they did, but maybe they really don't kind of thing. It seems like maybe that's reached a real tipping point. And you mentioned Colorado there. It seems like, I mean, come on, for so long, everyone has known that pot should be legal and that we're up against Leviathan. And Leviathan wants to keep it illegal, and so it's going to continue being illegal forever, like the Soviet Union is going to last forever kind of thing. And yet here we've actually begun to see the end of the war on pot, perhaps anyway, the beginning of the end of it. And it's become the kind of thing where it's now more of an open consensus. So I think, you know, it's possible that we can make some real headway. And after all, the war on drugs is at the root of so much of what's wrong here as far as the old rules that they've been allowed to bend so far that they've broken, you know, when it comes to what they're allowed to do to us.
Yeah, and it's great that the war on drugs looks like it's winding down. It never should have wound up to get rolling 30 years ago. But it's just to see the number of legal trump cards the government now has, something as simple as that, the audacity that that Congress would pass a provision that waived the statute of limitations for debt debt collection and sets free federal agencies to go after people for the alleged debts of their parents decades earlier. This perfectly captures Congress's attitude of due process and fair play for the American people.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a question of what's good for the federal agencies.
Yeah, and you know, you put in here in this article, too, that this is a while back, right? This has been building. It's only now becoming a political scandal where it's making the news and anybody's making a big deal out of it. But they've collected, what do you say, $400-something million worth of these taxes from regular people, you know? While the billionaires are bailed out and everyone else is suffering, they come, $424 million in debts that they've collected since 2011. And people with their congressmen refusing to help them this whole time.
Yeah, and there was an excellent story in Chicago last year by the NBC station, which said that thanks to that 2008 provision, anyone overpaid by a federal agency at any time in their life can now be tracked down, put on the hook for debts that are decades old. That summarized the problem perfectly.
Yeah.
But nobody in Washington D.C. paid attention.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's really cruel, too. I mean, it sounds like something out of a TV show, not something real, you know? Sounds like something some idiot politician in some TV drama, some low-rent TV drama proposes, and then it's explained to him that you can't do that, dude. That's going to That's going to look real bad. I guess you say in here, though, no one had to take responsibility for it, right? All congressmen deny having anything to do with this language.
Right, right. And but this has happened with so many other laws where there's some very controversial provision, and no one on Capitol Hill admits having written it. And there's all this weaseling and, slipping around. How the hell can we have a rule of law? We don't even know who wrote the damn law.
Yep. Hey, by the way, have you heard of this thing where, I don't know if they actually, no, I think they did introduce some legislation. This congressman wrote an essay in USA Today saying he wanted to roll back militarism on the local police level, and he wanted to start, I mean, it wasn't any kind of complete reform by any means, but he wanted to at least begin rolling back Pentagon giveaways to local police and sheriff's departments around the country. And I wonder whether you had heard of that. And especially whether you had heard that anybody else thought it was a good idea, because it's sort of like the legalization of pot still taking me kind of by surprise. That really took me by surprise as a thing that I just thought would never happen. It sure would be nice to see any kind of pushback on militarization. I just didn't think I would live to see it, you know, and here it looks
Yeah, but there has been pushback on militarization. There was pushback in the 1990s at times. And it's been sporadic, and I'm glad that some people are pushing back at this point. I don't really see it's going to change that much. And part of it, too, at some point, the feds have given so many armor, military-type equipment, Humvees, whatever, to local police. It doesn't really matter that much if the government stops giving more, because they're already armed to the teeth.
Right, yeah, that's true.
What you need is a sea change in cultural attitudes as far as how police are allowed to behave and treat other Americans. And there are some signs of a backlash growing. It's great with folks with their video cameras and with their cell phones and stuff are doing a great job and a courageous job of challenging that. But it's amazing how much worse it's gotten even the last 10 years as far as the cops acting so brazenly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was talking with Robert Higgs, and he was saying that it's a really extraordinary confluence of the kind of unleashing of police brutality on everyone, the way they've treated blacks all along, for example, right at the same time that everybody has an HD camera in their pocket. Everybody has an HD camera in their pocket. And so, and then access to YouTube and to all the social media, especially on Facebook, where, you know, if you have a few thousand friends on Facebook, you don't even have to be a libertarian, pretty much no matter who you are. If you have a whole lot of friends that you're interacting with on there, you're going to see basically what happens is every local police abuse story becomes a national story, whether Brian Williams or whoever covers it or not. It becomes a national news story in social media every time a cop is caught beating or killing somebody on camera like that. And so it's kind of a pretty big experiment. You know, here these guys are the worst they've ever been, right at the time where we have the most ability, not to hold them accountable, but to see, you know, and in fact, maybe that goes along with how bad they are and how little accountability they have, right at the same time that we have this much ability to see what it is that they're doing. And I guess it'll be interesting to see exactly how that plays out. It pisses me off, and it terrifies me, frankly, that, you know, and I know people who have been the subject of SWAT raids back in the past, and that doesn't sound like any kind of fun time at all, you know, to have to go through something like that, you know?
Well,
you don't have to be doing anything to get one either. That's the thing of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad enough being woken up early as it is.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to my world, man, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's encouraging that folks are doing that, and some of the groups like Cop Block and others are doing great work. It's surprising there's not been a hell of a lot more of a backlash and some leashes put on the cops already. So, I don't know. And if there's cops, it's interesting how they're always looking for a pretext to ramp up the power even more. I think back to 9/11, and it's amazing how much power they seize so quickly. Habeas corpus, torture, you know, making wars wherever they want, boom.
Yep. All right, well, I just realized that we're way over time, and we got to go, but thank you so much for your time. It's great to talk to you again, Jim.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Scott. It's a real pleasure.
All right, everybody, that is the great Jim Bovard, jimbovard.com.
for his blog and all his stuff. He's a Shutterbug, too. He's got a lot of great pictures for you if you want to check it all out there. And check him out on Amazon.com. The Fair Trade Fraud, The Farm Fiasco, Freedom in Chains, Feeling Your Pain, Terrorism and Tyranny, The Bush Betrayal, Attention Deficit Democracy, and Public Policy Hooligan. All a bunch of great work and good food for your brain. Check out James Bovard at Amazon.com. And thanks, Seedmore.